I'm still the superintendent of schools, and I'm working every day in the best interest of ASD students, staff, and this board and community.
The Anchorage School District Superintendent speaks out about his plans to leave. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a court order shuts down two wood-fired boilers in a Fairbanks neighborhood.
I heard several kids say, it's great, I can breathe again, it smells good.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska. Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
As the Alaska State Legislature starts its budget hearings, Senator Mark Begich is offering his own request, put $2 billion toward ports infrastructure.
A system of deep and shallow water ports across the region will expedite oil and gas development, expanding fishing, mining, and ship traffic throughout the area.
Begich made his request on Monday during his annual address to the legislature. He says that money would be matched by $3 billion in federal loans if his bill to create an Arctic Port Authority passes Congress. Right now, the closest deepwater port to the Arctic is 1,000 miles away in Dutch Harbor. The Army Corps of Engineers is currently looking at how feasible it would be to build one in Nome or Port Clarence. But it could be a while before the legislature is ready to allocate that kind of money toward ports development. Right now, the legislature is looking at a $13 billion budget with the possibility of tapping the state's reserves if it grows further. Senator Kevin Meyer, an Anchorage Republican, is the co-chair of the Finance Committee.
Well, I think it's a great program, a great idea, but we don't have $2 billion sitting around, so that's going to be a stretch.
Representative Alan Osterman, who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, agrees that it could be 5 years or more before the legislature starts talking in earnest about constructing ports in the Arctic. In addition to talking about Arctic development, Begich also called upon the legislature to reinstitute a coastal management program, and he described a suite of education bills that he just introduced in Congress, including one that would increase the child care tax credit. Begich, a Democrat, also needled the Republican majority he was speaking to at a few points in his address. He called it unfair for education to be funded without considering inflation. And he described a bill that tightens current voter identification rules as trying to solve a problem where none exists. Anchorage School Superintendent Jim Browder is speaking out publicly for the first time about his decision to look for other jobs. After just 8 months with the Anchorage School District, he announced Friday that he might be moving on. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
In the email addressed to staff Friday, Browder announced that he was considering leaving the district because one of his daughters and young grandson are experiencing severe medical issues, and that he believed it was his responsibility to be closer to them in Georgia. Browder commented for the first time on the situation at the early meeting of the Anchorage School Board Monday.
I'm still the superintendent of schools, and I'm working every day in the best interest of ASD students, staff, and this board and community. The board and my administration have a shared vision and a strong strategic plan, Destination 2020. Everyone in this administration and this board and this district is committed to the initiatives and goals within Destination 2020.
School board members learned Friday that Browder's in the running for a job in Des Moines, Iowa. School board president Jeannie Mackey says Browder had alerted the board that he may need to take time off about a month ago to go take care of ill family members. But it was news to them that he was applying for other jobs.
So now we're in a situation where he is pursuing outside employment, and we will deal with that and move forward.
Mackey says discussions about finding a possible successor will be addressed this week. Browder replaced longtime Superintendent Carol Como in July. He was hired after a more than seven-month-long search that cost the district more than $54,000. Despite the news that he may not fulfill his 3-year contract, Mackey says he was the right choice.
Quite a bit of time was spent on the search. We went over 100 applications. The board personally read each and every application. We had a search firm that assisted us in that, but for the most part, the board really was engaged in that process. And we felt that, and we still feel that Dr. Browder was the right choice. He's been doing a great job leading our district, and we really do hate to see him have to leave early.
Over the past 8 months, Browder has helped the district realign curriculum to the Common Core standards. Browder makes $180,000 a year. He has not yet submitted an official resignation. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Air quality in a Fairbanks neighborhood is dramatically cleaner following a court order that shut down 2 wood-fired boilers. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Smoke from the hydronic heaters on private property near the Wood River School had fouled neighborhood air since 2008 until an injunction sought by the State Department of Environmental Conservation halted their operation last month. Fairbanks North Star Borough Air Quality Manager Jim Connor says monitoring has since tracked a major reduction in fine particulate pollution.
We drive by the Wood River School almost on a daily basis on what we call our schools run with our instrumented vehicle. And since those outdoor wood boilers across the street have been shut down, we have noticed that there has been an improvement.
Local clean air advocate Patrice Lee says she was working as a substitute teacher at Wood River just after the boilers were shut down.
You could take a full breath and run around, and I heard several kids say, "It's great, it's great, I can breathe again. It smells good."
Smoke from the wood-fired boilers on the property of Andrew and Gloria Strawn generated repeated complaints. The Department of Environmental Conservation filed a public nuisance case against the Strawns, but the drawn-out legal process that's taken years is not encouraging to many. Wood River School staff member Dawn Brashear says she's glad a court order has stopped the pollution, but is puzzled and shocked at the time frame.
You know, as citizens, we reported it as if you would report a crime, naively believing that they would hear that complaint and take action, just like if you would call the police. So here I am 4.5 years later, as are others, wondering why it took that long.
Brashear says doctors tie her recent year's sinus and breathing problems to fine particulate pollution. She's optimistic that the upcoming Strawn trial will highlight the severity of health impacts.
Bring it to the public's attention that we have been hurt by this. We have been made sick by this.
Brashear says she's felt better since the boilers were shut down. Patrice Lee got active in the fight for clean air after her teenage son fell ill with heart trouble on an especially smoky day in another part of town several years ago. She says the public cannot wait for the state to sue every chronic polluter.
We can't prosecute one family a winter and do anything about our air pollution.
Lee wants the state legislature to empower the DEC to quickly cite and stop polluters. She's also pushing for subsidized heating oil. The borough's Connor says monitoring has shown this to be a very bad winter for air quality in Fairbanks, including 50 exceedances of Environmental Protection Agency fine particulate pollution standards in North Pole.
Very clearly points out that our area really is defined by local hotspots and areas of generally clean air. So we really do need to focus on the hotspots.
Special borough programs targeting high emissions heating devices in smoky neighborhoods are being considered. Connor says one would offer residents in the Dale Road area of Fairbanks up to $3,500 to swap polluting stoves for cleaner burning pellet fired units. Connor says another proposed measure targets replacement of 20 wood and coal burning boilers in an area of North Pole that has a major air quality problem.
We're offering $10,000 for people to swap out their hydronic heater for a much cleaner burning unit. And if they go with a pellet burning unit, then they'll get another $1,000 in pellets.
The special Dale Road and North Pole trade-out programs are part of a fine particulate pollution compliance plan that will be rolled out at a Borough Pollution Control Commission meeting March 19th and at an assembly meeting on the 21st. Connor says the plan, originally due back in December, is expected to be submitted by the end of the year. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the women in contention in this year's Iditarod.
No, the first 300 miles I'll run my own team. I really don't look around that much for 300 miles because I gotta see what I've got.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
One person is dead and two are injured after a backcountry skiing accident near Haines yesterday. Troopers identified the deceased as 34-year-old Christian Cabanella of Haines. Cabanella is a guide with Haines Heli-Ski Company, Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures. But company owner Scott Sundberg said today, Cabanella was skiing recreationally with the Heli-Ski Company, not as an official guide. Sundberg said the two injured skiers were in stable condition today. The group of five was skiing as part of a commercial tour with the company just west of Haines when the accident occurred, according to Sundberg. He said the incident might have been caused by a massive cornice failure, not an avalanche. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters agreed.
And from what it sounds like, they were traversing an area and then the snow collapsed from under them. But I don't know how far the fall was.
Cabanella's biography on the company's website says he was an international backcountry snowboard guide, originally from California. This is Haines' third heli-skiing fatality in 2 years. Last year, a guide and skier were killed in a March avalanche while skiing with a different company. Across the board, federal budget cuts are coming, half from the Department of Defense, the other half from other federal agency budgets. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has this report on how the cuts will affect Alaska Natives.
Cuts to the Department of Defense, or DOD, budget will lead to reduced funding for Army and Air Force base operations, and civilian employees likely will go on 2 days a month leave without pay. DOD cuts will also affect Alaska Natives through a Small Business Administration program. Under SBA 8A, Alaska Native for-profit corporations, federally recognized tribes across the country, and Native Hawaiians are given advantages in bidding on federal contracts. In fiscal year 2011, nationwide, SBA 8A participants secured $16.7 billion in contracts. Executive Director of the Native American Contractors Association, Kevin Alice, says the upcoming cuts put those contracts in jeopardy.
Many of our businesses are DOD contractors. And so when you have this broad brush to, you know, just eliminate X amount of dollars from the budget of DOD, that's going to flow down to many of these shareholders and tribal members and Native Americans not getting the resources that have flown through this program and through these companies.
Alaska Federation of Natives President Julie Kitka says cuts to other federal agencies, including cuts to everything from housing, science, and energy assistance to wildfire management, will also have far-reaching impacts.
For example, the Department of Interior, in which we have a lot of tribal programs, they're projecting that the tribes will lose about $130 million across the nation, impacting such areas as human services, law enforcement, BIA schools, economic development, and natural resources.
Kitka says hospitals, clinics, medical care for Native Americans are not exempt from the cuts.
They're suggesting that nationally about 3,000 fewer inpatient admissions and 804,000 fewer outpatient visits to the whole Indian Health Service network across the nation.
Kitka says details about how the across-the-board cuts will play out have yet to be determined. She says the resulting uncertainty will drag out for months, drawing agency and public attention away from problems such as high energy costs and subsistence management issues that need to be addressed. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Two speakers at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Forum today made the case for accepting federal funds to expand Medicaid in the state. They also asked chamber members to speak out on the issue. Last week, Governor Sean Parnell announced he won't expand Medicaid in the state, at least for now. Valerie Davidson is with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. She was careful not to criticize the governor's decision and was relieved he left the door open to expanding Medicaid in the future.
Other states who have very conservative governors have made the decision to expand because, quite frankly, it's just too good a return on investment. Very small, modest investment by the state yields pretty significant federal dollars. And so I'm hopeful that as the governor finishes his own analysis, that will point us to opportunities in our state as well.
The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium commissioned two independent studies on the costs and benefits of the Medicaid expansion. They show the expansion would offer health insurance to 40,000 Alaskans and pump $1 billion into the state economy over the next 10 years. The federal government will cover 100% of the cost of the expansion for the first 3 years and gradually transition to 90% by 2020. Karen Perdue is president of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. She says the Medicaid expansion would help lower health care premiums for everyone in the state. That's because fewer people would show up at hospitals unable to pay their bill. It's called uncompensated care, and Perdue says that cost is ultimately paid by people who have insurance.
Who pays for the uncompensated care? A lot of times that money gets shifted, that cost gets shifted to private employers. So I do think we need to look at that and see what kind of, not only would hospitals in the communities do better, but what would it mean for private employers?
Perdue says the governor should take as much time as he needs to understand the complex issue. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce hasn't taken a position yet on the Medicaid expansion, but expects to sometime this month. Parnell says he plans to revisit the prospect of Medicaid expansion in December when he rolls out his annual budget proposal.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Enjoy high school hoops in Anchorage during the 2013 ASAA March Madness State Basketball Championships, March 16th through the 23rd. Come early and stay late to enjoy Anchorage's big wildlife with events, shopping, dining, and activities for the whole family. For more information on what to see and do in Anchorage, explore anchorage.net/Alaskans. Your source for Anchorage information. This message sponsored by Visit Anchorage.
Martin Boozer is setting an unprecedented pace in this year's Iditarod. The four-time champion is currently resting at the Roan checkpoint, where he's been since just before 10 this morning. Matt Fahler, who is also running dogs from Boozer's kennel, is in second place, also at Roan. A dozen mushers have left Rainy Pass in pursuit, including Paul Gebhardt, brothers Lance and Jason Mackey, and Aaron Burmeister. There are currently five women running among the top 20 in this year's Iditarod, and as KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, the women in the race aren't holding back.
After placing second last year to Dallas, CV Allie Zirkel decided she was no longer just training her dogs, but she'd also need to train herself to claim a win.
We decided that our lifestyle ought to be a little more fit. Like, our dogs are the most fit athletes in the entire world, and standing on the back of the sled like a big lug seemed a little bit unfair.
This is Zirkel's 13th Iditarod, and she's learned that anything can happen on the way to Nome.
No, the first 300 miles I'll run my own team. I really don't look around that much for 300 miles, because I gotta see what I've got.
Zirkel has a friendly rivalry with fellow musher Michelle Phillips. The two battled for first place in last month's Yukon Quest 300, taunting and jeering each other down the trail. Phillips from Tagish, Yukon, is running her fourth Iditarod. Her highest place is 16th.
I would really like to be top 10. That's my goal, so I hope we accomplish that.
When asked about the competitive women's field, Jody Bailey, who runs dogs out of Chattanooga with Dan Caduce, was surprised to find out people consider her one of the top women.
You know, I think that might be a slight mistake. People sometimes make that list based on what we've done and what we've accomplished, and that's great, but I think you need to take into consideration what our goals are for an individual race. This year, Dan and I have a really young team that we've been working on building for the future.
Other women rounding out the field include veteran Kelly Griffin, as well as Jessie Royer, who may have lucked out when she decided to train her dogs in a warmer Montana climate.
It'll be good for me, for sure. I think some of the teams up here, it's been warm up here lately too, though. So some of the other teams are probably getting used to the warm weather a little bit too, but I've definitely been training at a lot of 40 above. Yeah. So it's not going to hurt me any.
The 10-day forecast isn't calling for terribly frigid weather along the Iditarod Trail this year. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Icicle Seafood's ADAC plant won't be processing fish this summer. As KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, the closure, although temporary, is a blow to the struggling fishing industry in the Western Aleutians.
Icicle didn't respond to multiple interview requests, but the company's plant manager told the ADAC City Council last month that the plant wouldn't be operating because generating power is too expensive during the slower fishing months. That's disappointing news for Pat Davis. He owns the 48-foot Cascade and fishes for halibut and black cod near ADAC. He says being able to deliver to the Icicle plant saved him a 450-mile run each way to Unalaska.
Just a beautiful thing. You're not under the gun. You can kind of fish at your leisure. Fish as hard as you want or take a day off.
This summer, he's anticipating a more rushed schedule since the trip to Unalaska takes at least 3 days, and most processors want halibut and black cod delivered within 7 days of being caught.
Once you start, you're going to have to just go for it, or you'll end up having to come back to town with, you know, half a load instead of, you know, what you should be getting.
Less fish and more fuel means less money for fishermen. But they aren't the only ones that will be impacted by the closure. The Icicle plant is one of the few industries on the island and the primary source of tax revenue for the city of ADAC. City Manager Leighton Lockett says the closure could reduce tax revenues for the year by 20 to 30%.
It will be painful. However, based on our experiencing the complete closure of the fish processing plant, the situation wouldn't be new.
In 2009, the company that used to own the plant went bankrupt, and it was shuttered until Icicle bought it in the spring of 2011. Lockett says Icicle has assured the city it's working to reduce its energy costs so it can stay open year-round. In Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
For the next several weeks, APRN will be airing a series that looks at how Alaskans describe what makes their way of life unique. Whether you live in a village or a city, everyone has a culture, and we're going to bring you stories of how both urban and rural Alaskans define and live theirs. Moving from urban anywhere to rural Alaska can be a tough transition. Some newcomers don't last long, worn down by the long winters or a feeling of isolation. Others stay, sometimes for years. Contributor Len Anderson talked to some Northwest Alaska residents to find out what makes the difference.
For 30 years, Irma Mitchell has been the secretary at the Shungnak Village School. She's seen a lot of teachers come and go. Some quit after 1 year, maybe two. She says the short-timers seldom give reasons. As for the longer-term principals,
what makes a good principal is they just do and learn our culture and learn the kids, the village, and they come back and stay like 4 or 5 years, mostly 5, 7 years.
Last spring, Hans Banish and his wife Bonnie finished a long career of bush teaching.
It's really, really important. I can't emphasize enough that you get out and see what's going on in the community. Go down and fish and take a boat ride, get to know people outside of the school system.
They began in Norvik in 1978, then Shungnak, and moved back to Shungnak for their final 3 years. Banish's advice comes from his own early years.
We lived in village housing. We lived in a cabin down by the river. So much goes on down by the river, and so many decisions get made down there. The big decisions get made on the riverbank. They don't get necessarily made in offices.
Banish adds by getting out with the people, being a decent person, the newcomer reaps an additional reward.
Particularly in the bush, you might make mistakes, but if your intentions are good and people know that you're really giving it your all, doing your best, and that you really are doing what's best for kids, they'll allow you a lot of mistakes. It's a forgiving culture.
Doug Neal has lived 25 years in the Northwest Alaska hub community of Kotzebue. For 19 years, he's worked for OTZ Telephone Cooperative and is now executive director.
One of the challenges that non-natives have when they come to Kotzebue
is that most of them, or too many of them, just don't take the time to get out in the country and to spend time with native people. And I mean, it seems like too many of them are just coming up to make money and then leave as soon as they can. And of course, if you live anywhere, if all you're doing is going back and forth between where you work and where you live, I don't care whether it's Kotzebue or some urban part of the country, you're going to get burned out on that location pretty fast.
Neil says he's always eager to help people break the isolation of work and home.
I had a teacher friend bring a new teacher out to my little cabin, which is about 15 miles out of Kotzebue, and they just spent the day over there and then had dinner over there, and it's in the trees, and it's a lovely little spot. The teacher who had been here for years said that, you know, if we get the new teachers out here just one time and see how much fun it is to be out at a place like this and that it's so close to Kotzebue, teacher retention would go way up.
Neil says a recent school district survey supports that observation. After 2.5 decades north of the Arctic Circle in Kotzebue, Neil still likes his work. He thoroughly enjoys the people. But most of all, there's the land.
For me, it's the wild country. And there just are not too many places that you can live where you're just surrounded by millions of acres of just wild country. The rivers don't have any dams on them. It's roadless. It's just beautiful, untouched wilderness. I mean, it's fun to live someplace where 400,000 caribou migrate within the region each year, and where at different times of the year, the fish are so plentiful and the birds are so plentiful and the big game is so plentiful. And so that's just really, really something special. And you just can't get that anyplace else.
Neil gazes out his office window, past the buildings lining the shore to the frozen sound and the low mountains beyond. I love this little community, he says. I fell in love with it when I first came here, and 25 years later, I still do. For Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Len Anderson.
The series on culture is supported by a grant from the Alaska Humanities Forum. More stories in the series are at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, and Len Anderson in Kotzebue and Shungnak. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Parents, be a hero to your kids. Make time to be physically active as a family. Encourage your children to participate in the Alaska Healthy Futures Challenge at their school. All kids need to do is be active 3 times a week and keep a log of their physical activities. They'll feel great and get cool prizes, too. Go to playeveryday.alaska.gov to find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, information systems, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.